I needed to not skate by for once in my life, and they didn't let me.
At the end of the day, if you know that you don't feel good about the job, you got to be able to leave that behind.
They just kept asking me to come back, and I truly love Milwaukee and Southeast Wisconsin.
It's always great to be at WTMJ.
This is WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome to WTMJ Conversations. I'm your host, Libby Collins. When you think about the Kentucky Derby, a royal wedding, or a high-end fashion show, what comes to mind? Well, custom-made hats, of course. But are you aware there are only 15 master hatters left in the United States? And guess what? Some of them are right here in Milwaukee. Joining us is master hat maker and milliner Kate McLaughlin from the McLaughlin Hayes Hat Company, located right here in Milwaukee. And Kate, you're not the only one, because your husband John is also a master hat maker.
Yes.
As well as Steve Hayes.
Yes. They both are. So we have actually over 50 years of hat making experience in our atelier in the Bayview neighborhood.
Now, I said hat maker and I said milliner. What's the difference?
So it's completely sex specific and who you're designing and making a hat for. So the art of ladies hat making is millinery. And if you are the person making it, you're the milliner. And that is kind of the mantra. People may not remember my name, but they'll say the milliner. And you know exactly who you need to ask for. And then hatting is the art of making men's hats. And even though they're both hats, they're wildly two different worlds.
I can remember when I was a little girl, my grandmother loved hats. And she had a milliner. She would go in there and she would have the most gorgeous hats made. And I'm sorry we didn't keep them, because they would have been fabulous. But when did that start to go out of the culture, where you stop seeing the milliners in neighborhoods?
Well, when it comes from millinery, it is going to be the bouffant hairstyles of the 1960s and early 70s. And then also, of course, with adding Vatican II.
Oh, when ladies stopped
yes,
wearing,
when they stopped
hats
wearing
to mass.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, so that would have been in the mid to late 60s.
Yes.
So that's when hat making kind of went away, but it's come back.
It has come back with inspiration. A lot of it has to do with calling back the past and wonderful shows out there like Downton Abbey and 1923 and all those great television shows and movies. And then also inspiration of seeing what icons in fashion and what they're wearing. Of course, royal weddings is always something that gets Americans excited about wearing hats again.
How did you first get involved in making hats?
Well, in the 1980s, I was literally Molly Ringwald's character in Pretty in Pink, and nothing was cool enough for me. And so I had been sewing ever since I was a little girl. And then when I was a junior in high school in our home ec class, I made my very first hat. And all of the other girls in class made like simple little braided headbands. And I made something incredibly theatrical, something that you can imagine in a fashion folio of Marie Antoinette. And it was this big tapestry hat with ostrich feathers and veiling and flowers. And it was huge. Like, you could have seen it on stage at the Skylight Opera. That's how impressive it was. And so here I was, this junior in high school, and I found this love of hats.
What grade did you get, by the way, on that hat?
Oh, I was the favorite, of course.
So the A-plus kind of got
you
into it. So after that, did you continue to make hats?
So, yes, I did. I always figured things out, but when I went to fashion design school in Chicago, there was only one millinery class available, and I took it. And I excelled, but it was the most basic class available, because when you're in a fashion program, you're supposed to get a taste of what all affects fashion. And I took the class, I excelled, and then I moved to Detroit and then had a wonderful career there working very high-end bridal. I worked at bridal salons where our gowns started at $2,000 and went up from there. And this is the early 90s, so do that math. So I was working with incredible designers like Lazzaro, Reem Acra, Ron Levis, Vera Wang, Randy Fanoli, and everyone knows Randy Fanoli from Say Yes to the Dress. And with doing very high-end bridal, well, in the early 90s, wearing hats for mothers or second marriages was very common. So I had the confidence, because I took that one class in college, and I was like, yes, I can absolutely do that for you.
But you were working with brides who can be bridesmaids.
Yes. And thankfully, somehow I'm a whisperer. I'm a hat whisperer. I'm a style whisperer. And I rarely had a bridezilla. The experiences I had were just really wonderful. I think the thing that I observed more was the dynamic in families that was never like really put on me because I was either their consultant, their alterationist, or I was making their bridal headpiece or their bridal hat.
What was the most fabulous bridal headpiece you made?
Well, the most fabulous bridal ensemble I was ever a part of was a Ron Levis gown. And being able to have met Ron Levis and to work with that gentleman was incredible because all of his gowns were made in New York. Everything was hand beaded with proper Alençon laces. All the laces were from France. The Duchess satins were real silk, and the styles were timeless and classic. A real gentleman designer. And when I was all done with that bride and her bridal trousseau and everything she needed for her day, that was a $13,000 wedding dress, bridal veil, bridal headpiece. And of course, like most brides do, lose weight. And that is where I learned and had the gumption, and don't tell anyone I know how to sew. But that is also where I was like, yeah, you lost 20 pounds and we have to take your $13,000 dress in. And so then here I was in my early 20s cutting into a $13,000 dress and doing her alterations as well. So in my career, and then also working with actors, because actors and brides are very similar. And now our customer base is so wide and varied. So it is really creating that relationship and that trust. And that is what I felt I have always had with working with my clientele or helping people see who I am and my vision, but then that I'm available to help them with their vision.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
You really need to be rooted in fashion history to be able to pull off what the designer is asking you for.
Milliner Kate McLaughlin talks about finding the perfect hat for an actor on stage.
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome back. I'm Libby Collins. We're talking with Kate McLaughlin from the McLaughlin Hayes Hat Company right here in Milwaukee.
You mentioned working with actors. How did that all come about?
Oh my gosh. Well, in high school, I was involved with high school theater and doing the costumes. I never wanted to get on stage. Most people always think once they meet me and see me, they're like, oh, you were on stage. No, I was the support. So I would work with the costumes, make sure everything was right, that the actors could do their job. And then when I moved to Detroit, that's when I started my theatrical, as well as the bridal and the sewing and making couture garments for clients, continued. So many years I worked with all types of costuming in the Detroit area. And then when I moved back to Milwaukee in October of 2000, then I full-heartedly leapt into pursuing my theatrical career, moving out of the bridal world and theater all throughout Milwaukee. And one thing most people don't realize is how theater rich and vivacious and how lucky we are in Milwaukee to have such a wonderful art scene and a theatrical world. So when I came back, I started working at the Skylight Opera in their costume department. And I was there for a season, developed great relationships there, but then was quickly poached by the costume department at the Milwaukee Repertory Theater for their 50th anniversary. And that started my decade-long career at the Milwaukee Repertory Theater.
What were some of your favorite shows you worked on?
Oh, my most favorite was Bach in Leipzig, which was incredible. It was an all-male cast and takes place in the early 1700s in Leipzig, Germany. And you had just an amazing cast of characters. And of course, it all revolves around the music of Bach. And so the costumes were grand, the wigs were grand, and there was only one hat in that show.
When you're working with a period piece like that,
yes,
what sort of research goes into finding the perfect hat that you're trying to duplicate?
The hat show that you still see that's really heavy at the Milwaukee Rep, and you still see my work on that stage, is a Christmas Carol. Christmas Carol, it is wonderful to know that I have been away from the Rep now for 11 seasons, and my work is still on stage. So when it comes to the type of research, you really need to be rooted in fashion history to be able to pull off what the designer is asking you for, what the actor needs, and what the director needs. So to have a historical clothing background is incredibly necessary, but then also you have to come at it with and wearing the technician's hat. Yes, is it beautiful to make an all period appropriate hat? Yes, but will it work on stage for that actor?
That's what I was going to say, is you've got to get something that the person in the very last row of the theater is going to see and appreciate. And just having that vision must not always be easy.
It isn't easy. And so when it's coming, looking at that research that the costume designer has given you, and then knowing how your stage is oriented, and like you were saying, with where the audience members are sitting, it is really important to be able to zero in on the details that are going to be recognized from a distance, or the details that will make a difference of how that hat is working for that actor. So do I want to make something beautiful all the time? Absolutely. Do I have to eliminate some of those beautiful details because no one else will see them? Sadly, yes.
All right. Now, you mentioned working with actors, and a little bit earlier you said brides. Can you tell when a person walks into your studio what kind of headpiece is going to look best on them?
Oh, absolutely. So when it comes to hat wearing, there's a lot of math that goes along with choosing the right hat. And it just isn't about the occasion that that hat might be worn. But when I start with a client, when you hit that door, this is how I see a brand new customer walking through the door. Think about those television shows, and it's like a crime drama, and you see all that data going on the screen, and that they're kind of like looking at all of the stats and all the details. When I look at a customer who walks through the door, I am looking at that triangle from the head to the shoulders, to their jawline, to the length of their face, and doing the math of what style of hat will look good on them. And that nails it right from the get-go. Usually it is rare that starting with a client, I will put a hat on them that looks bad.
Can everybody wear a hat?
Absolutely. And it's understanding that math, or working with somebody who understands that math. Everybody can wear a hat. And think about, you and I are both eyeglass wearers. You go and you sit with your optometrist and you try on all the different eyeglass frames. Same scenario. They are going to do that math too by what you need for your prescription, as well as what you're going to be confident in wearing. So it's very similar. All I ask as a milliner is for you to allow some time with me so we can figure that out together.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
To today, the pillbox style and that lovely, elegant East Coast style is coming back.
Milliner Kate McLaughlin talks about iconic hat wearers.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
I'm your host, Libby Collins. Let's return to our conversation with Kate McLaughlin, milliner from the McLaughlin Hayes Hat Company. How much does an individual's personality come into that discussion when you're creating a hat?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. The personality comes in a lot. And even if I have a customer who has a lot of personality, sometimes they want a hat that isn't as much, that could be more of an austere looking hat, but their personality is going to carry it through. So you also don't have to wear a hat one single way. You can change the personality of the hat just by the rake on how you wear it.
Wait, you said the personality of the hat. What do you mean?
Oh my gosh, yes. Hats absolutely can contribute to personality. If there's a day, Libby, if you don't want to be who you don't want to be that day, you can put a hat on and be another person, or that hat can help you be Libby that day. So it all just depends on how you put the hat on, how you allow yourself to look in the mirror, and allowing yourself and giving yourself that permission is going to have that hat help you get through whatever it is you need to do. And it's amazing. You can completely cut off the world while wearing a hat, or you can welcome the world by wearing a hat, and it's just how you wear it.
As you look at people in history, women in particular, who was a great hat model, in your opinion? Of the ladies that we've seen, the fashion icons through the years, who wore a hat well?
Audrey Hepburn, Sophia Loren.
What about Jackie Kennedy?
Jackie Kennedy, of course. Jackie Kennedy, and to today, the pillbox style and that lovely, elegant East Coast style is coming back. The pillbox, if you look across the pond, is very popular in the UK and continental, in Europe, and also down in Australia. And that is all just fashion recycling itself. And it's a really beautiful look.
Do you just sort of wait to see what the royal family is going to wear on those big occasions?
Of course. It's very exciting. I will get up at whatever time in the morning I need to get up to watch those events. It is very exciting. Our customer base finds it exciting. And if they don't find it exciting, they at least find it interesting, because it is a spectacle. It is that pomp and circumstance that, as much as people may deny, everyone has a kind of at least an interest. Even if they have a disdain for it, they still have an interest in it.
But it is theatrical in a sense when you look at the royal family, because there they are on the balcony and they're making an appearance to the subjects who all gather to see them. Their hat designers must really look at that total picture as much as you do.
Oh, absolutely. Again, it stems back from that relationship and what you are trying to bring across, what kind of message. Because no matter if it's a hat or just how what clothes you wear that day or what eyeglass frames you choose that day, you're sending a message to the people around you. So when you have a family like the royal family and the extended royal family, it is very important to the culture of Great Britain to really connect with the commoners, to have an availability. Because even though that everything is pressed and it is worn in a certain way and those hats are perched perfectly and the fellas are either in their dress uniform or they're in a top hat, they're perfect.
We don't have a royal family in Milwaukee. How did you decide to open a business that caters strictly to millinery and hats?
That is something that my husband John and I, the other hatter at McLaughlin and Hayes Hat Company, started seeing. And I was still at the Milwaukee Repertory Theater. Our children were small, in diapers, and it was the last recession, 2008, 2009, and 10. And I was working at the Milwaukee Rep downtown. Mad Men, the television show, was all of the rage. And I started seeing more men downtown in hats. We were watching television one night, and my husband and I decided that we would start counting the commercials showing men in hats. During that show, there were 7 commercials that featured men in hats, everything from a high-end car advertisement to a board game and everything in between showing men in hats. So when we first decided to open our hat store, we were just a men's hat store, because at that time there was no Downton Abbey to inspire women to wear hats.
Still ahead on WTMJ Conversations.
We have a beautiful hat that the hatter that they worked with in London could not create. And they did not have the right wooden equipment to make the hat.
Milliner Kate McLaughlin talks about her hats that have appeared on stage and screen, and also Henry the Hatter.
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
And I'm Libby Collins. Our guest today is Kate McLaughlin, a milliner from the McLaughlin Hayes Hat Company, located right here in Milwaukee. You opened this through crowdfunding.
So we opened up a portion of it through crowdfunding. That was actually when we got our equipment from our business mentor in Detroit. And that is when we came out with our first line of handmade hats through our shop. And that crowdfunding was to get our first line of hats designed and made by hand by us out into the world.
You mentioned your connection in Detroit, and I love this name, Henry the Hatter. How did that all come about?
So when I lived in Detroit, I would shop there. And of course, always loving hats, I would shop at Henry the Hatter. And it was exclusively, mainly a men's hat store. Well, there's millinery and then there are hats. And hats are unisex. A woman can easily wear a men's hat without any issue. So I would shop there at Henry the Hatter. And when John and I decided to open our business, I went on a whim. I was like, oh, well, they're the oldest hat store in the country. They've been around since 1893. I'm going to give them a call. And that day, thankfully, the owner was in. He had time to talk with me. We spent like 45 minutes on the phone discussing the pitfalls and what his family has navigated through the decades of owning Henry the Hatter. And so he, Paul Wasserman, became our business mentor. So whenever there was a question or there was a lull or something weird was happening with Christmas, we would give a call and he would always reassure us that, you know, it's just the hat biz.
You mentioned the hat business, and I would think there is a certain artistry and technique going into creating custom-made hats.
Yes, there is definitely an artistry and technique. To the point where I am now teaching at Mount Mary University in the fashion department, millinery. And one of the main questions people ask me is, aren't you afraid that people are going to copy you? Well, yeah, it's going to happen. Copying happens. You cannot put a stamp on fashion items and expect them not to be copied. But the thing that other people do not have are my hands. They don't have my hands. They don't have my eye. And so therefore, I want to teach our craft. I need to pass on our craft because, well, at some point, I won't be around anymore. And someone needs to know the things I've learned over the decades.
Do you find this is a popular class?
Yes, it was a very popular class. And even had faculty at Mount Mary University take my class, which was lovely.
But you don't just create hats for people locally. You've worked with theater companies throughout the United States, including one show on Broadway that actually won a Tony.
Yes, that would be War Paint. So War Paint, this was pre-pandemic. War Paint won Tony Awards, multiple. And so our hats were on stage with Patti LuPone, which was incredible.
And that show was about a fashion icon.
Fashion icons, yes. Elizabeth Arden and Estée Lauder. And the little war that those two cosmetic ladies had between each other.
And right now, Peaky Blinders, which is huge in a lot of circles, you've created things for that.
Yes, we have a beautiful hat that the hatter that they worked with in London could not create. And they did not have the right wooden equipment to make the hat. And there was a specific brim. When you come into the atelier, it is a working museum. Our showroom is connected to our workroom. And so you see all these antiques in working process. And the hat maker in London did not have a particular brim shape. We got the call and we had just a few days to get a hat made for Peaky Blinders and then send it overnight on Peaky Blinders Netflix FedEx account overnight to London. We had a hat made for them in under 3 days and to London by that Saturday fitting, and we got the call on the Sunday before.
Now, you mentioned the wooden equipment. Explain what that is.
Well, all of the hats are made on wood forms. Men's hats are a little more straightforward than ladies' forms. The men's forms consist of the crown, which is the top of the hat that goes over your head, and then the flange, which is the brim that extends from your head over the shoulder. And that was a form that they did not have in London, and it was a specific curl to the brim. So all of these forms are made out of wood that do not shrink or swell because of heat or humidity. And we work with a lot of heat and we work with a lot of steam in our business. And all of our forms, the majority of them, are all antique. We lost our last American hat block maker about a dozen years ago, and he retired in his late 80s. And there's no one left in this country that makes straightforward hat blocks. So if we're getting a hat block, it's coming from Great Britain or Australia. And then there's a few block makers in Europe that their proportions are okay. They're getting better, but they're not as good as what you're going to find in the UK or Australia. So it's an expensive business to be in because these forms are not cheap. And then when it comes to women's hat forms or the blocks. Women's hat forms are fashion hats. So you're going to see them literally look like sculpture. And they make one specific style of hat and in one size. So when you come into the atelier, you will see all these beautiful blocks of wood that look like you should have it on your mantle at home, which you shouldn't. It should be in our collection working. But they're beautiful works of art. And again, if I need one of my antique blocks repaired, it's going to Australia or Great Britain.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
When the Kentucky Derby Museum put that call out to create something for their fashion exhibit, we were there for the call.
Kate McLaughlin from the McLaughlin Hayes Hat Company talks about creating a hat for the Kentucky Derby Museum.
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome back to our conversation with milliner Kate McLaughlin from the McLaughlin Hayes Hat Company. I'm your host, Libby Collins.
Well, like you said, you walk into McLaughlin Hayes Hats, and it is like a museum, but you have a hat in a very special museum, the Kentucky Derby Museum, that for their 150th anniversary called you to say, create a hat.
So, yes, it was really fantastic. So there's a type of hat that we make in atelier that is a process my husband John created, and he is creating art on top of art. So we feel our hat making is art. But then John is an artist and he's taking his original art and then applying it to the fur felt, which is a beaver fur felt. So it's the top quality because it is the best felt to take the alcohol ink. And he is drawing and almost like tattooing the fur felt with the ink. And it's an amazing process to watch. So when the Kentucky Derby Museum put that call out to create something for their fashion exhibit for this current season, we were there for the call. And John created, and it was inspired by Seabiscuit and the moment when the horse is crossing the finish line. So John created the art of it, drew it out flat, and then he makes the hat. And then he hand draws that art again. So it's going from a flat piece of paper to a hat that is three dimensional. And then he changes it and gets the proportions right. And then he does this work where it's like tattooing the felt. So it's this really incredible scene. And it's a fedora. And currently it is on display at the Kentucky Derby Museum for their fashion exhibition. And then it is also now cataloged into the permanent collection at Churchill Downs at the Kentucky Derby Museum.
Some of the other shows you've worked on come to mind, and anyone who's ever seen a staged opera comes away, even if they don't understand a word that was said on stage, talking about the costumes, especially those hats. And you've worked not with just the Lyric Opera in Chicago, but with the Metropolitan Opera in New York.
Yes. So working with the Lyric and the Metropolitan Opera in New York has both been incredible honors. We did the headwear for the last production of Romeo and Juliet at the Metropolitan Opera in New York. So that was absolutely incredible to see those pieces and to be communicating through renderings, through designer notes, never meeting any of the actors, never meeting the designer. But that's a whole nother thing, to be very satisfied by looking at what has been sent to us in a box with renderings, research notes, fabrics, a little accoutrements, things like that, that they want in the hats, and then communicating through photographs and whatnot, sending boxes out so they can be there for fittings, getting boxes back, and then recreating the hats that are in those boxes for them to become the hat for stage wear.
You've also created hats for what? The History Channel, the Discovery Channel, and even the Weather Channel?
Yes, the Weather Channel. And it wasn't just the hats. It was the full costume design for the productions that we did for all of those channels. There's multiple specials and shows that we did on all three of those channels. And that was when I was steeped in my costume design world, but hats were my treat. You know, it's just like when you get done cutting the grass and you get like that cold beer or that glass of lemonade. When I would get done with costume designing or making something for another designer, having that opportunity to make a hat was that treat. So hats were always the thing. And so that is when I was still in my theatrical career to then pivot out of my theatrical career when our business was doing well. Because mind you, we opened up during a recession and we had a banker laugh in our face when we went to a loan. And so we decided to do it on our own. But then when I pivoted and said, okay, our business is doing well enough that I can leave my decade-long career with the Milwaukee Rep to fully be engrossed as an entrepreneur and my husband and I working at the same job every day. So we didn't even have a fallback secondary job. You know, where a lot of entrepreneurs, their spouse will have like the other catch-all job. We didn't do that. So we have both of us working as artists, working as designers, working as confidants to our clients. And we truly love the work that we do.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
It is really fun to, you know, say that we've done an amazing hat for Buddy Guy that was on PBS's American Masters.
Milliner Kate McLaughlin talks about some of the celebrities who have visited the McLaughlin Hayes Hat Company right here in Milwaukee.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
I'm Libby Collins. Today's conversation is with milliner Kate McLaughlin from the McLaughlin Hayes Hat Company.
You know, a lot of celebrities wear hats.
Yes.
Have any of them ever been in your shop?
Yes, we have had some celebrities, and that is a funny question that we always get asked. But what I would like to point out is that our rock stars, our local and our customers who aren't local, who continually order bespoke hats from us. They help us keep the lights on. They keep everything going because they come back and they shop with us all the time. Instead of maybe that one hat that we did for Sheryl Crow or that one hat that we did for Kid Rock or, okay, the one musician that I absolutely, he tugged on my heartstrings. And he has five of our hats, is Ray LaMontagne. He's just an incredible gentleman, just an energy, a spirit to have in the shop, and just incredible. So it is really fun to, you know, say that we've done an amazing hat for Buddy Guy that was on PBS's American Masters, and to have the honor to know that we have true American artists like Buddy Guy wearing our hats on stage. And Buddy Guy has his own story about the hat. So I'm going to encourage people to go to American Masters, watch that show, and learn the story of Buddy Guy and the polka dots. So it's really wonderful to have those clients. But it is our local people and our everyday people who tell other people about us, who keep our lights on.
What's your favorite hat you've ever designed?
What I love about what I do, I can see the elevation of my art through the hats that we make. I can see the elevation of us being artists and craftspeople because our work is always getting better. Because we, and I believe, even though I'm an educator, I believe that I and we are lifelong learners. And we may know a heck of a lot about hats, but I'll be the first to tell you I don't know everything, but I'll roll up my sleeves and figure out with you what you want to do. But currently, my therapy is creating millinery flowers for hats and headdresses, and even for men's boutonnieres. And I do have a few men who have enough confidence who will wear a beautiful flower on their hat. But I recreate flowers in the Japanese and the French tradition using Japanese and French tools out of silk and out of leather. And they're incredible. And like every cut I make, every silk petal I hand paint with dye, every hot tool I use to take a flat piece of fabric and turn it into a dimensional petal, that for me is meditation and growing my spirit as a milliner to be able to create art that honors nature. And that comes in my millinery flower making. And I will go out on that limb and say I'm the only one in the whole state of Wisconsin who can take silk and turn it into a flower that looks real, or take leather 2-ounce kid leather and turn it into a flower that is just mind-blowing. And that is kind of my love about millinery because, Libby, if I wanted to put your bag on my head and turn it into a hat, I could. But it is taking those moments and saying, a hat can be literally anything you want it to be. It can be what you expect a hat to be, or it could be your handbag turned upside down on my head. And that's what I love about making hats. So maybe tomorrow your hat on my head could be my favorite hat. I don't know. It's going to depend on my mood. But really, it's the whole process of hat making where my joy comes through and it's infectious and I love sharing it. We at McLaughlin and Hayes Hat Company, we love sharing it with everybody.
Kate McLaughlin, thanks for joining us today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
We've been talking with Kate McLaughlin from the McLaughlin Hayes Hat Company. We found out how there are only 15 master hat makers left in the United States, and 3 of them are located right here in the city. Now, if you joined us late and you want to hear our entire conversation with Kate, go to WTMJ.com and share today's show with your friends and family. You'll also find a partial transcript courtesy of eCourt Reporters. For WTMJ Conversations, I'm Libby Collins.